Now entering Nerdist.com.
Greetings, traveler. You've stumbled upon a podcast of great wisdom and knowledge. Press 1 to continue.
1.
You have chosen to continue with Today We Learned. To wield the wizard's hey, you are a cool guy who's not into wizards, but you might be after listening to this. Guys, what's up? Dan Casey here with my faithful co-host, Razzle.
Hey, my name's Dan Casey.
And I'm Razzle. And today we're learning all about the creator of a brand new show on Cartoon Network. It's kind of cool. It's been a long journey for this show. You'll learn more about it on today's episode. But he was a very fun guy, cool guy. And if you are listening to this on Nerdist, chances are he nerds out about a lot of the same stuff you do as well.
Most likely.
We definitely geeked out a little bit about JRPGs in this episode. Quick spoiler alert there. So we'll get into it. But yeah, let's
great episode.
I had a good time with him, I want to go back and watch the episodes of the show I haven't seen. It's only premiered on September 29th, so it's still relatively new, and you'll find out there's a lot more episodes to come. So.
Oh yeah, I'm excited. It sounds like a really, really fun show.
Like it'll fill maybe some of that like Adventure Time style gap that's going to be in our life soon when Adventure Time goes off the air in a couple. I think it's around until 2018.
Something
they announced,
like that.
But that's still crazy.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get to it, shall we?
To it. I think we shall.
Mm-hmm.
Today we learn number 155 with Kyle Carroza.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
All right. Hello there and welcome back to Today We Learned. Hope you guys are having a great Monday or whatever day you decide to listen to this. But I got to say, it's best when it's fresh, straight off the podcast cart when they come by your desk.
Hey, you know what? I like them fresh off the podcast
cart. Yeah, a hot, steaming podcast delivered straight to your door.
You know, and I'm glad because my doorman usually doesn't let the podcast carts through on my
Yeah, you have place. Like some intense security
it's
at your
like,
place.
Come on, guy. Like, they come every Tuesday. You can let them in a day early.
Exactly. You guys know it. You're getting in on Tuesday?
Well, you know.
Razzle, come on,
Tuesday
man.
Then what? What is it? Two on Tuesday? What's that? The dude from Popeye?
I gladly give you a dollar on Tuesday for a hamburger today or something like that?
Something like,
Wednesday?
Like, settle down. Wednesday.
Yeah, Wimpy with his
come
hamburgers.
On, Wimpy guy, come on.
Good old. That was a great Popeye deep cut right there.
Get a new hat, Wimpy.
But we're not here to talk about old animation,
no,
Razzle.
We're here new animation.
For new animation.
That's
seamless
segue.
Oh, man. That
with
voice.
Me and you'll see
a world of new animation. A world of new animation.
Yeah, there we go.
Scansion.
Exactly. So. Joining us today, that voice you're hearing is the creator and one of the voice actors on Cartoon Network's Mighty Magiswords, Kyle Carroza.
That's
Carroza?
Carroza.
Carroza. Damn it. I just asked you and still botched it.
Well, I mean, you just fell off the podcast cart.
Exactly. Look, I was distracted by all
he's
that.
He's still waiting on the pronunciation cart to come by.
Exactly. that cart comes on Tuesday.
Oh, there
we go. You hipsters and your pronunciation.
Exactly. I just wanted to pronounce it for like it used to be in the old country. Carroza.
Oh, I had a high school chorus teacher that pronounced it that way, like tried to put as much of an accent on it as possible.
I
enjoyed.
Kyle.
I never objected. I liked Karotz. Yeah. And actually, at some point, he just shortened it to Karotz. And I'm like, that's a nickname. I'll take that.
Yeah.
Karotz.
Look, I don't know if you can do that legally, but I'll allow it. So, Kyle, first of all, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you
so much for doing
and I don't know how much you know about the podcast, but we usually like to start it off by having our guest either tell us something about themselves that people might not know or something they learned recently. And that can be something as simple as you opened a Snapple cap and you're like, oh, wow, whaling used to be used for murdering whales.
Get out of town.
Or just something life-changing that you learned. So a whole range of knowledge. Is there anything
rules.
That comes to mind?
So really, just anything?
Anything.
Anything
very
you learned. There's no,
there's just
no,
like
there's
a,
no
just
rules
a conversation
all.
Starter.
Yeah. Okay, tonight I have to record two demos for songs that are going to be in the show because I'm trying to get everything I possibly can done before I leave for New York Comic Con, which I'm segueing into a trip to visit my folks in upstate New York, which may be the first – in fact, definitely is the first vacation I've had since we started production on the show.
Really? And when did you guys start production? Because I know it started as a series of shorts. Is this counting that
as 3 years ago? Yes, it is counting
wow.
that as well.
Okay. Oh, wow. So you've earned a vacation.
I kind of like left briefly to get married, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your brief sojourn to get married.
Thank you.
But tell us a little bit about the show, Mighty Magic Sword. It started as a series of shorts, but now it premiered September 29th, if I'm not mistaken. That's awesome. So tell us about the show. Where did it come from? What's it like for the uninitiated out there?
Where it came from, there's a long answer and a short answer. I'll go with the long answer because it's a podcast.
Exactly.
Yes, please do.
So these characters first show
–
you know, I first
long.
Came up with them – no, I first came up with them when I was in high school in 1996, which I know because I signed the date on the drawing. My folks were right. I should do that. But I had a friend who had like just gotten me into JRPGs.
Nice.
And so
I was playing
on the Super NES Final Fantasy III, which is Final Fantasy VI.
Fantastic.
And Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm. And now, let's pretend I don't know what the JR stands for.
Okay.
Let's just pretend.
Japanese role-playing games.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
You were just in Japan, Razzle.
Yes. So
there they just call them RPGs.
Oh, there we go. Yes. That I'm familiar with.
Yes.
Because other than, you know, a brief, you know, early childhood foray into He-Man, I wasn't really that into Sword and Sorcery up to that point. Even being a Nintendo fan, I didn't get into Zelda till later.
Mm-hmm.
So JR, would Dragon Warrior be considered a JRPG?
Absolutely.
Then I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm
playing Dragon Quest VII right now. In fact, I think that's like the closest to an existing JRPG universe to
that
the one that we're kind of playing
takes
in.
So long to get going. It was like 2 hours before my first combat.
Yep.
So not to interrupt your story, then we'll get back. I was recently in Japan for 3 weeks, and I remember it as Dragon Warrior. I remember getting the because I had a subscription to Nintendo Power, and they sent me like an envelope with the game and like maps and all sorts of weird stuff to help you beat the game. So that's the Dragon Warrior 1. I know it as Dragon Warrior 1. But I was in Japan, and I didn't know it was called Dragon Quest or anything like that. But it's literally like the biggest shit in Japan. Like you think it was Lady Gaga in Japan because they got like candies of the little slimes.
Yeah, I remember
all the slime guy. That little slime guy is like the mascot of Japan.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, who's the president? Oh, a green slime approaches.
It's incredibly popular in Japan. It has a cult following here, but definitely not the same level of just recognition across the entire country.
Yeah, the reason I got an NES when I was a kid was that like I saw this like news report on like just local television. They were talking about Mario 2, which was about to come out, and it was all exciting in Japan. They were talking about Zelda 2, which was all about exciting coming out in Japan. And that was like all stuff that was like well established in the US at that point. Everybody knows what that is. And then we're like, but in Japan, this Dragon Quest thing is huge. I'm like, oh. Okay, I'll log that away in my, you know, brain bank that never lets anything go.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll remember that instead of math. Cool.
Yeah. Tell me
what
about
What was
that.
X again?
Yeah. Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
A Green Slime Approaches is number X. So you got into JRPGs in high school, 96.
And so I was like, I want a set of characters like that. And so I came up with the first version of Amber Prohias and then also the characters that would become Princess Sanji and Phil. And I've thankfully since found 3 out of 4 of those drawings. But I drew them. I kind of like shoved them into this high school comedy idea that I just shoved characters into all the time because you're in high school and that's what you do. And then, like, I think I did one drawing of them each and then just kind of didn't think about them anymore. Then, you know, I had gotten a pilot on Nickelodeon in 2005, and that just kind of kicked me off, like, pitching at least something every year. And so I was, like, looking around, like, all right, what do I got? What do I have to pitch? What can I get together while I have pitching opportunities? I was trying to get stuff together fast. And I was like, oh, I have these 4 guys. All right, I'll try to come up with something for them. And I kind of came up with their basic universe, did at least a couple more drawings of them, and just kind of their basic deal as warriors for hire. And then after that didn't go anywhere, I just put it away for a while again. Then, you know, this opportunity came along. And I had pitched a completely different action comedy. They kind of called me in for a meeting, said, hey, we already have something kind of similar to this, but we like the gist of it. We like your tone. We like the drawings. Can you bring us like some really short, just 5 to 7 page pitches that are just kind of in this, you know, general ilk?
Yeah.
And So what I did in the first one, you know, I'm a huge fan of Japanese live-action superhero shows, tokusatsu, the things that Power Rangers are based on.
Yeah.
And the thing that they've been kind of like doing in all those shows for the past several years is like having kind of a collectible gimmick. And the one thing I like about the way they use them, that it's like so deeply integrated into the show that it's, you know – It's more than just the gimmick. It's like there's a direct cause and effect. It's really fun. You want to see it used. And then, you know, when you get to have it, it looks exactly like it does on the show. And I wanted to have something like that. And so I tried to integrate something like that into all of these, you know, make that the kind of like catalyst to cartoon fun. And it's something that I'm so like deeply actually into that like kind of the layer of cynicism that could go into that is not a thing. And so I was like, all right, I have these characters. These two work. What can I give them? And that's when I came up with the idea for the Magiswords.
That's great. It's so funny because that you like you mentioned that about the Power Rangers too, because my friend Cameron was a Power Ranger, one of the newer ones.
Oh, cool.
He was a
Which series?
Cameron Gibo, he knows exactly. He was some green one, some silver dude.
Some green one, some silver dude.
Some silver dude who came from outer space.
He was on Power Rangers Super Mega Force.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, he's the blonde dude on that.
It looks like he was the Silver Ranger based on the image that just popped up.
Silver greens, he had like
Orion, the Silver
something.
Ranger.
Yeah. But, like, legitimately, and I haven't watched Power Rangers, and I haven't seen any of his episodes, but I haven't watched it since I was a kid in high school or whatever. But talking to him and learning and like being at going, you know, hanging out with him at conventions or whatever, exactly like you say, the swords and the stuff they use in the show are legitimately the same toys that you can buy,
right?
Like it's like the exact, they're just using the toys in the show.
it's
bananas and genius at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the kind of thing where the cynical part of you wants to be like, oh, that's just like corporate making you put those in there so you can sell more product. Yeah, but it's also nice when the creative behind it is also like, no, like, yes, I want toys, but these are the toys that I want. So that's why I'm designing this way, because I want there to be something that you can look for. And like, it's like Pokemon. Like that
I think it's kind of the same way that like some modern remakes of 80s properties that are made by people who are huge nerds of those properties. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of times I think they care about it more than, you know, whoever was doing the original.
Yeah.
Like particularly like Voltron springs to mind. I really like DreamWorks' Voltron.
It is
and
so good.
I like love the idea of the original, but I can't really get into it.
Yeah.
It seems like they care a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like removes that layer of cynicism.
But there's an interesting thing because there's so many remakes and not enough of them are of that.
Right, right.
Of that quality.
Yeah,
of that
for every Voltron, there's a MacGyver, a Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon's all right.
Is it?
I mean, Ghostbusters was horrible.
For every Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
the
God.
Lethal Weapon pilot
is
all right.
There's four brothers who care about this city.
Now they're making a new Magnum P.I. That's like...
What could possibly go wrong?
Do you feel personally slighted that they haven't called you in yet?
Absolutely. I mean, I can dress up like his daughter. Yeah. That's the thing. Is this going to be Magnum P.I.'s daughter?
You need to play the brother who desperately wants to be Magnum P.I. like the original, but she's
so
the one
off.
Who has like all the
so
detective talents. And
it's
you
like
just
they haven't seen all the videos I've been posting on the internet.
Yeah,
for the
no,
last
Razzle
year.
Has a series of Instagram videos where it's basically him running around the city with a mustache and sunglasses, doing Magnum P.I. style
P.I.
stuff.
Theme. Absolutely, love that.
If the Magnum P.I. remake is anything other than the Beastie Boys Sabotage video, then they failed.
yeah, absolutely. Playing in space because the Starfleet
Star Trek
is
Beyond.
Starfleet's going to have Beastie Boys on their spaceship. I'd a thousand years.
I'd watch that.
Speaking of Starfleet, I saw an interesting article today on The Guardian. Apparently, and this is not Starfleet per se, but rather the Nova Corps, the
Guardians.
Marvel Universe Guardians of the Galaxy, Defenders of Outer Space. Apparently, The Guardian did a list. They wrote up a study that was done about the movies that have the most on-screen deaths, the deadliest on-screen movies, and Guardians of the Galaxy eclipses every other film by more than 70,000 deaths.
How is that?
In Guardians of the Galaxy, there are 83,871 on-screen deaths, making it the deadliest movie of all time. The next one on that list is 2014's Dracula Untold, which has 5,687 on-screen deaths.
Do they not see Star Wars Force Awakens when they laser shot Metropolis planets?
You're not seeing those individuals. What you're seeing that in Guardians, because when they show that protective like netting of the ships that form, there's 80,000 ships and they all blow up, and one has at least one pilot inside.
Right, sure.
Because I was saying, like, what about the originals? What about like A New Hope when you see Alderaan explode? Yeah. Isn't that like billions of people? Technically, yes, but those are off screen. It's implied murder. So this is the most on-screen murder.
So you mean to tell me there's 80,000 ships? Like, if you pause that scene in Guardians, you could count every one of those little, and the CG department copy and pasted 80,000 ships.
Pretty much, yeah.
Do you think Tarantino's going to hear this and think of it as a personal challenge?
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. That's the hateful 80,000.
I have a question. I'm looking at your characters here on the Magiswords, and there's one that jumps out at me, and it's a matter of four words. Hoppus.
Yes.
And it's a rabbit.
Right.
That's Blink-182.
It certainly is.
That's what I thought.
Because I think I just, you know, I'm not necessarily...
You didn't want to go with the long...
I don't dislike Blink-182, but it was mostly my sister was into them, you know, which was the proper age to be into them.
Absolutely.
And I heard the name Mark Hoppus, and I thought it was the funniest
thing
I'd ever
heard.
Did you
see the rabbit logo? And you seen their rabbit logo skanking probably?
You know, I don't think I ever made the connection before.
That's why I immediately thought of Hoppus, because in the late 90s, you know, Dude Ranch and all of that, they always had like a skanking rabbit. So that's why that's awesome. That's, yeah. I don't know. I've seen that.
Skanking rabbit related to Skank and Pickle in any way?
I don't know. I also have
memory lane with a detour into Scottsville.
Well, I also have a fact that I've had for like four episodes trying to pull about Blink-182. And I seen that, and it's like, holy cow, I got to do this. Blink-182's manager told them they needed a radio song on 2001's Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. And Mark Hoppus vowed to make the cheesiest throwaway, and this is in quotes, the throwaway fucking single he could, and they wrote the rock show in 10 minutes. They wrote rock show in 10 minutes, and the song peaked at number 2 on Billboard's Modern Rock track charts, and it reached number 14 in the UK. And their manager told them they needed a single, so Mark went and wrote the rock show, then Tom went and wrote First State, which was the second single.
Oh, my God.
The two most cheesiest songs they've done.
Their effort to spite their manager, they wound up creating two hits.
Two of their best songs.
I feel like this sort of thing happens a lot. Mm-hmm. I think Rat Fink was created that way.
Probably.
Where it's just like, I think the story goes that he was like trying to create like the most unappealing possible character he could, so he can get out of the business, and then it was... The gigantic hit.
Just blew up on him. Well, apparently, I looked this up. The original band name was Blink until an Irish band with a similar name threatened them with a lawsuit if they didn't change it. So they added the 182. And a popular theory is that the 182 comes from Scarface, which is the amount of times the F word is dropped in that movie. Yeah.
It's also the number of on-screen deaths in Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's the number of on-screen deaths in the rock show video.
So you invented these characters with swords. You're a fan of swords. Are you a fan? Like, what made you, I mean, aside from the toys, so growing up, you were, because I'm interested, how old are you?
I am 37.
Okay, so we're essentially the same age. I'm 34. So we grew up with a lot of the same like shit like that. Like, did you grow up? So you grew up with like Voltron and like Power Rangers and He-Man, or what was like? What really? Because obviously you mentioned the JRPGs,
right?
But I mean, like, I like swords and all that. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it's like an interesting thing. Like, I'm always curious to find out what was
I think like the first thing that put an idea like, you know, big crazy swords in my head was probably like, I didn't play it because I kind of thought it was, you know, I was a Nintendo fanboy, and you know, I was able to play Final Fantasy 3-6 on a Nintendo system, but then, you know, when I saw 7 and I saw Cloud with his massive stinking sword, I'm like, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen. And so like, that was an image that never left me, and so when I went to design these swords, that's why they're huge, because I'm like, you know, they're, you know, I have to tell the storyboard artist to like, no, guys, too small. They're huge. These swords are huge.
It's like, but no, should I make them the size of an actual sword? No, make them wildly impractical.
Heavens no.
It's always my favorite part about seeing a lot of cosplay, especially ones based on things like Final Fantasy VII, because you see this like tiny teenager, like a gravity-defying wig, carrying a sword that is at least double their height.
Right.
It's like, huh? The best part is when you have to, of like seeing people going to conventions and have to take the train to get there, just people in commuter gear staring at them like, oh, it's for a convention. Okay. I'm still going to call the police.
Yeah, and there have been a few opportunities where we see the warriors as, you know, small children with magic swords. The animation team asked me if I wanted to, like, shrink these swords accordingly, and I said, no, sir. I want it to look like they're, you know, that it's very awkward for them to be holding these gigantic swords that are probably about their height or larger.
Do you have a favorite magic sword that you've created so far?
Kind of my, like, off-the-bat favorite is Excaliburger, and that's the one that shoots propeller burgers, little, you know, burgers with propellers on top.
Of course.
That's because I just kind of like burgers as images. I certainly like eating a delicious and tasty burger, but just, like, visually a hamburger, like, graphically a hamburger is a very, you know, it's an image I like.
There's something satisfying about that, especially in animation. Like, that burgers and pizza in animation, I feel, in particular. Like, I still, to this day, like, the pizza from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles remains my platonic ideal of what a slice should be, even though
Samurai Pizza Cats nearly killed me.
Yeah, if I ever saw something with that much elasticity in real life, I would probably think that, like, an H.P. Lovecraft story was leaking. So it's seeing like something like that with the burger and the propeller on top is very visually satisfying. I also like the one that's just it's like a, is that a dolphin or a narwhal? It looks like a narwhal.
Dolphin.
Okay, because I the sword poking out would make me think narwhal, but I guess what is a narwhal if not the baby of a dolphin and a sword?
Right. But also like there are some newer ones that are certainly contenders. Frog Missile Magisword is a big favorite of mine.
Oh man.
And we kind of have one coming up that I can't quite talk about, but like the whole big deal of the episode is how cool the Magisword is and how much the warriors like each want to use it, and so when you get to that one, you'll know.
Awesome. Now I've seen images of an accordion Magisword.
Yes.
And I know that you play an accordion and I've read as well that Weird Al did a voice. Is
right.
that
Yes, that's
so
true.
What was that like when a meeting of the accordion playing minds?
Well, I thankfully had the opportunity to meet Al a few times before then, just because, you know, I kind of have a lot of friends who are, you know, because I'm also part of the, you know, comedy music world.
Yeah.
I know some people who know him, and so I've gotten to, you know, go backstage and meet him. And, you know, in the past few years, I had done a song for a Weird Al tribute album.
That's cool.
And it was cool because before he knew I was in the room, I heard him like saying nice things about this tribute album, and then I was able to go up to him. I was like, "Yeah, he's not going to just say he likes it because someone who worked on it is right."
Exactly. Here. Yeah, that's nice. Where he's like, "Oh, I actually did enjoy this. Oh, thank God."
What song did you do?
I did. What is it? Yeah, Checks in the Mail.
Oh,
as a loud funk song.
That's awesome.
Because the thing is, like, whenever I do a song cover, it can't be. I feel like it can't be a song that I love too much.
Yeah.
It can't be a song that's my favorite because then I won't want to change anything about it, and then there'll be no point to me doing
the
cover.
Yeah, you'll be too close to it.
Right.
That's very true. That's an interesting thought.
Hey, did Al give you any accordion tips?
No. Here's the thing. Weird Al actually knows how to play the accordion.
Yeah.
I know how to like pick it up, play it approximately like a keytar, and screw around until something that sounds vaguely like a song comes out of it. I am not a great player, and that's okay. I record lots and lots of the song demos for the show, and then I get to be amazed when the Andy Paley and his studio musicians make them sound amazing knowing how to play.
That's funny. Yeah, that's it's kind of like I mean, I love the Ramones, but I always said they wrote amazing songs for better bands to cover.
Yeah.
Like, I love the Ramones, but the cover versions of Ramones songs, I feel like, are always way better than the actual Ramones songs.
Oh, well, this is fun. Apparently, there used to be a game show and talent contest on TV in the Soviet Union that was called Play Your Accordion.
Wow.
I'm hoping that it was just limited to playing the accordion. And I pulled up a page just entitled Accordion Facts. The word accordion comes from the German word Akkord, which means agreement or harmony, which some people might find disagreeable if depending on their opinion about polka and other accordion-associated music. Weird Al got his first accordion at age 7 from his parents, who then enrolled him at the famous Zamor Academy of Music, and his grandma would pay him $1 every time he came over to visit if he would play the accordion. So he got enrolled in the music business at an early age.
What a smart guy.
Yeah. So how long have you been playing accordion for?
Or trying to play the accordion?
So I certainly got it while I was in high school. My grandparents got me my first accordion at a yard sale. It was already this huge, beautiful accordion for only $50, and they talked it down to $40 because they're my grandparents. And so that would have been either junior or senior year I would have gotten my first like real accordion.
Yeah.
Actually, no. It had to be senior year because we kind of had this annual, you know, talent show kind of thing. Like that was – I think it was like just restricted to like the band and chorus students. And if you look at the video for junior year, I'm playing like this little like concertina looking – you can buy it at a toy store kind of thing that makes a different note when you pull it in and push it out. And then in senior year, I'm playing like the full big accordion. And so, yeah.
Oh, man.
Had it in senior year.
I love a good concertina. Concertinas are great.
This was not a good concertina.
Now, you're from a town called Catskill.
Right.
You're born and raised in a town called Catskill. It's a town in the southeast part of Greene County, New York. It was established in 1788. Well, still part of Albany County. I love here it says it was bought from natives for some trinkets in 1678.
I would love to know the
what
specifics
kind of trinkets.
Of trinkets.
That's what I mean. Right? It's like I'm seeing this like I use trinkets as like a slang derogatory thing, but the heck that like it's
I'll
a
give
Wikipedia.
You four Funkos.
Yeah. Right.
The fact that it's that Wikipedia has it in trinkets. Like most things I feel like it says like for like some furs and things like this, but in this entry in Wikipedia it literally just says trinkets.
They must have been some quality trinkets.
In 1788, and so it took, you know, 100 years for them to establish it as a town, apparently.
But Bungo also looking Rocket Raccoon, and they took it as a threat.
Yeah, right? Looking at notable residents here, it says that Mike Tyson.
Yes.
Get out of town.
Guess how quickly those signs came down.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Although
did they go
really
back
fun.
Up after The Hangover came out?
No, but I don't know if this is true, but if I would love it if in the place where like we had kind of this giant seemingly permanent billboard that said Home of Mike Tyson, I would love it. I would love to know if a Mike Tyson Mysteries billboard ever ended up there.
That would be great.
That would have been beautiful coming full
the
circle.
The mystery spot, and it's literally his boxing gym on a hill where things float.
But it was really exciting at the time, you know, playing Mike Tyson's Punch Out and getting to see your like hometown name flash across the screen.
Yeah, right. Just it must have been like, oh my god, that's us.
Yep,
we're in a video game. Suck it, Schenectady.
Bonus points pronouncing Schenectady correctly.
I went on a limb there.
Where's Schenectady at? Is that also a town or what?
It's also in New York. I don't know exactly where.
Well,
it's somewhere that isn't important enough to mention because it wasn't in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Oh, man.
Take that, Kooksaki.
Exactly.
Home of Jimmy Fallon, I think.
Croton on Hudson.
I got
to find this. When you were with the Magi Swords, did you ever look to any like famous swords in history to base your designs off of them? Or is it just sort of like, okay.
Oh, you are giving me way too much credit.
Hey, man, there's a lot. You have to generate a lot of Magi Swords. So I didn't know at a certain point you're like, okay, I don't have a good pun for this one. Maybe I will look to.
No,
like,
I think Excalibur is the only one that really has a direct pun name other than the Hover Swords. Yeah, most of the time it's more about like what we require for the next scene, like what joke or what, you know, story point we need rather than, you know, actual swords, because I mean, our warriors, I don't think they've ever seen a normal sword before. If they saw one, they wouldn't know what it was.
What do I do with this?
They'd probably be disappointed by it.
There's no gimmick to this. Well, I guess this one makes me the king of all England, but apart from that,
who needs the pressure?
Yeah, they just Brexited. I don't want to be part of that. Sounds messy.
Also, what's England?
Follow-up question. So what's the typical like turnaround time for a single episode? How long does a single episode take from sort of concept to completion?
It's a little hard to put a finger on because we have like multiple episodes going on at the same
time. Gotcha.
Like there's different ones going on at different times. So, you know, we'll – and also the length of time between coming up with the initial story idea, coming up with the outline, and going into storyboard will vary depending on, you know, how far ahead of things me and our writer are. So there's like a little bit of a variable there. But, you know, it'll whenever we're done making the outline – which is a process that usually takes about a week for us. Mm-hmm. It'll then go to the storyboard artists. They have 5 weeks to complete it. Yeah, because it's, you know, 4 weeks and change to do the first version, then a couple days for changes, although I think they're going to get a little bit more time later. But then I kind of do a final dialogue pass, make any other changes that I, you know, that I want to make as Mr. Creator Guy of the show, and then we record the scratch dialogue. We make the animatic, and then it gets after, you know, all the other pre-production work is done, you know, backgrounds, character designs, and everything, it gets sent to Inspedia in Malaysia, an animation studio. How long does it take them from there? Is it taken?
I mean, they have speed in their name, so I would hope it's fast.
But I mean, at the same time, they also have, you know, multiple teams
working
on the shows at the same time. And so, you know, and also if it's sometimes they'll require more time if it's an episode that's especially difficult or, you know, has like a new concept like, you know, this crazy water effect we put on some scenes that were underwater. That took a little bit of extra time. Yeah, a few months.
Is there anything that ever gets sort of lost in translation, or you have to spend extra time explaining, like, okay, it's not a typo, it's Excalibur, since you're dealing with a animation studio that's halfway across the world?
For the most part, no. I mean, they're very fluent in English, almost to the degree where I, you know. Could you call it like an official second language? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, which is, you know, makes sense to me because I have like some online friends who geek out with me about Kamen Rider and stuff who are from Malaysia, and they're speaking to me in perfect English. And actually that kind of helps us because my animation crew is nerdy about a lot of the same stuff as me. So there's a lot of things I don't have to explain because they already get all of my, you know, all of my nerd references.
That's good.
Them. They're you know, I'll what's nice is that I can be – what's nice about modern technology is that I can be, you know, like connected to these guys on social networking, and I'll like see one of the animation director's Kamen Rider drawings will be like, yeah, and like bond over it and stuff. And I'll also see – one thing that's really cool to see is he'll do like a special reward drawing for whatever animator got the fewest notes that week. And like he'll attach
that's
it
great.
To – he'll like get some dollar store toys and make it look like the dollar store toy is a Magisword that the character is wielding.
That's cool.
Oh, that's fine.
And those are really cool to look at.
That's neat. That's really cool. What so this is the first season.
Yes.
Right?
It's kind of our third first season in a way, but yeah.
Yeah, because you've done the shorts. And how many episodes are there going to be?
Am I allowed to answer that? Okay. 50-something.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Good for you. That's amazing. That's great.
Yeah.
That's a lot of episodes.
Because it's like 52 11s, but then two of them are two-parters that'll be combined.
When you got that order, were you like, yes? Or were you like, yeah, oh, God, all right,
no.
Yeah.
No, I was like, yes. I was ready for this. There was a lot. This built up a lot because I did the 15-second ones, the 3-minute ones, the 5-minute ones, and I'm like, yes, gimme!
Yeah.
That's awesome.
This next episode order is hour-long Magiswords.
Okay.
So how is that? Has there been a challenge at all in sort of like adapting the show from like that sort of micro length to a longer form, or you sort of enjoy the freedom to tell longer form stories with these characters?
I am enjoying the freedom, although sometimes I think the bigger challenge was realizing that even in that expansion I needed less than I thought I did.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of times what I was writing probably would have been more comfortable for a 22-minute rather than an 11-minute. And so our outlines are getting shorter and shorter, and as a result we're, you know, throwing out less storyboard, which is great because we're kind of like trying to really encourage our teams not to storyboard too much, because I don't want these guys getting burned out. I don't want these guys working a lot of extra hours, because, you know, I've been a storyboard artist. I've done that. And like there have been scenes where I'm like, I know this scene is going to get cut out. There's nothing funny about this. I can't make it funny. This scene is going to be cut out, and I have to put the same amount of time into it as I do everything else. And so I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to learn from all of the experiences I had working, you know, under different creators in different places. It's like trying to give my storyboard artist the exact communication I wish I had when I was in their position.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to make it all work. And so a lot of that's been realizing how much material I don't need to give them from the get-go.
Yeah. That's nice. I guess it's hard to get to that point to realize that you can be more economical with the amount of work you're doing, because, you know, I feel like whenever I undertake a creative project, I always like, oh, I have to way overwrite this or way overplan.
Right.
But when you're like, well, I guess you have to settle into that groove, because you're going to have 50 episodes. Sort of like, all right, cool. We've hit our stride. We know, all right, you do this much, you do this much, and then we can all hopefully be out of here by 6 p.m.
Yeah. And I think you'll see like the pace of the show change as you go along. I mean, mm-hmm. we're always kind of, you know, we're deliberately fast-paced. We're deliberately kind of insane.
Yeah.
But some episodes are more insane than others. There are episodes where, you know, clearly it's like, okay.
Oh, this is the week we all had cold brew.
Right. But as we get to like the ones we're doing now, or it's in a place where I'm really happy with the pace of them, it's really comfortable for me. There's still going to be plenty of people who think like it's fast and insane, but that's just what we are.
Awesome.
I think cartoons have changed so much in the past 10 years that and, you know, I have nothing against them, because I still like them. There's lots of things that are on right now that I really like. I'm Steven addict. But things that are like really cartoony, like really super Looney Tunes cartoony, we haven't seen a whole lot of them lately. And so I'm doing something that's like that again. And I think it's jarring to some people, because it's been so long since there's been something like that.
Yeah.
None of these people are children.
Yeah. it's kind of shocking to me that there aren't more Looney Tunes, period. Like that, I feel like that franchise has just sort of been like chilling out.
Well, I mean, they've got Wabbit on right now.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about this the other day, because like I kind of hadn't watched Looney Tunes in a while, because I had, you know, watched them so much that I burned out on them.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to like not look at this for a few years,
mm-hmm.
and then like try to come back with fresh eyes. And I'm really enjoying it, actually.
Yeah.
But I'm like looking at – I think part of the – I think what I would suggest if I were in that position would be to like focus on characters that aren't necessarily in the spotlight. Like mm-hmm. maybe not do Bugs and Daffy again, because the thing about them is that like they're so well established that if you try to do something like super different with them, that it can be uncomfortable. I think it would be great to make a show starting around Porky, so you can actually like develop Porky more, and then surround him with like the one or two off characters that they tried pairing him with before realizing that pairing him with Daffy worked.
Mm-hmm.
Like bring back Gabby Goat from the Black and White Lays.
Gabby's ready. Gabby's been waiting.
Bring back Beans from when they were Porky and Beans.
Yeah.
Like nobody cares about these guys, so you can develop the heck out of them and just
exactly.
like make this really interesting different show. Like
I'm even under that, like that that idea with like the old Hanna-Barbera stuff. Like how are they not
DC Comics right now is doing something very interesting.
How do they not have a Wacky Races or like a Wally Gator or things like that? Like that's a whole world they could be mining.
They are in the comic books. DC has been rebooting a lot of these with sort of a like it's kind of what Archie did with Archie when they did Afterlife with Archie. They're doing it in a more mature adult way. Like Wacky Races right now, the comic book is like Mad Max Fury Road in the world of Wacky Races.
I mean, Rango, right? That movie Rango, Johnny Depp is Rango.
Yeah.
You could do that with Quick Draw McGraw, or who's a blue one? The blue dog, that other
Dynamite.
Dynamite, or yeah, I mean, there's just I don't know. There's a wealth of old Grape Ape. Come on, dude, give me a Grape Ape cartoon. Give me a Grape Ape. Give me a live action Magilla Gorilla.
But again, I feel like the more obscure the Hanna-Barbera property, the more fun you could have with it.
Yeah,
Jabberjaw. Give me a Jabberjaw movie.
Inch High Private Eye.
Yeah, yeah.
Like do Inch High Private Eye like
no, this Yogi
Ace
Bear.
Attorney.
Yeah. Like I don't need any of these Yogi Bears.
It'll be the next superhero movie craze. We'll move up to C-list animation cast-offs.
Hey, man. I have a question.
Yeah.
Because like I googling your name and all that. How many vests do you own?
I gotta be past 20 by now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite one? Because there's like a I'm looking in, on you know there, you have quite a few and there's one there's a tan one that I used to have a very similar one of.
I have a few contenders cool, for like, favorite. Yeah. There is this shiny silver red and blue one that I have.
Okay.
That's a big favorite. I also have one that is blue and has like these patches all over it. One of them is like. There's like something. There are things relating to skiing and things relating to Texas. And one of them has like Texas in this rainbow font. And I'm like, who are you? Where did you find these? I'm very happy to own this.
That's great.
Like, how did you own this and let it go?
I'll tell you what. Like, I love them. I need to get another one. The one I had, I don't know where it is, but they're comfortable and they, believe it or not, like they keep you warm and like you could. It's an interesting thing.
And your arms are unencumbered by the tyranny of cloth.
It's banana. It's like bananas how comfortable they are.
It's a way to layer in Southern California.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Completely. And I can hold all my stuff in it.
Yeah.
Like, I can actually comfortably carry around a 3DS.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, you don't want to miss out on those sweet, sweet street passes.
Exactly.
And if I'm not mistaken, our producer Aristotle has a denim vest and a matching one for his dog. Is that correct? Okay. Just double checking, because that's one of my favorite images of the bad boy Jeff. When I was doing some research for this episode, I saw that you worked on Animaniacs back in the day.
For 2 days. Yes.
Okay. What was it like working on it for those 2 days? Was it weird going into something like that? How aware were you of the show?
Well, I mean, I was very aware of the show. What happened is, you know, I was the weird kid who read the credits. And, you know, a lot of, you know, most animation done for television is actually animated overseas. Mm-hmm. There was one studio who was animating for Animaniacs called StarToons. They were in Homewood, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. And I figured this out and I found an address and I, you know, sent them a fan letter. And, you know, I went over there to like see what working there would be like because they liked my work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was doing. Just like a few cleanups and in-betweens on a slappy episode called Bully for Skippy. Basically the way it left off is I had submitted for a full tuition scholarship to the Art Institute of Philadelphia. It was kind of like a portfolio contest.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, all right, if I win that, I will go to college. If I do not get this full tuition scholarship, I'll go to Homewood, Illinois and work for StarToons. And I got the scholarship.
Oh.
I don't know which – like in the long run, which would have been the better choice. Like StarToons may have been better from a networking standpoint and I certainly would have learned a lot on the job. At the same time, I was kind of a sheltered kid. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if I would have been socially ready to live by myself in a place where I've never been.
Yeah, it's especially like moving from a small town in New York to Chicago.
Right.
Like that's a huge change.
So it's – you know. I may have like required the social experience of college. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I've not had the easiest career, so it's hard to say. I don't know what would have been the better choice in the long run. I'm here doing this now,
exactly.
So I guess, you know,
hey, as long as it all works out in the long run,
right.
It's worth it. But real quick about Animaniacs, I just looked this up, and I'm a little surprised to learn that they weren't always going to be what would you call the Animaniacs? Cats?
That was like a frequent subject of, you know, that was a joke in the show.
Yeah,
they don't know
exactly.
What they are.
They're like some nondescript, creatures. Yeah, some nondescript 30s animation.
Whatever
creature.
Bosco was.
Yeah. Originally, though, they were going to be three Warner Brothers, and they were going to be ducks named Yakky, Smacky, and Wacky, which is news to me.
Yeah, you can find drawings of a few variations. You can find like they basically looked like variations of Plucky.
Yeah, they all look like like. Like three shades of Plucky.
Although you can also see a picture of four versions of the Warners that are like the creature they are now, but mm-hmm. like Wacko's kind of split into two characters.
And to be modeled after the four Warner Brothers, presumably?
I'm not sure, because like Dot was in it at that point.
Oh, really? Because I was just curious, because since they had the three Warner Brothers at in that first one, like the three, like, oh, here's their three brother ducks.
I heard a rumor about Dot's name, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that it's like, you know, in WB, you know, there's the period after the initial, so
that would make sense.
She's that Dot.
Gotcha.
Oh, that's so funny. That's clever.
Oh, man. Apparently, Hello Nurse, their catchphrase, was supposed to be for Buster Bunny from Tiny Toon Adventures.
Oh.
Originally, it was going to be his catchphrase, but they dropped it because it, quote, made no sense for the character.
Hello,
which is great.
Nurse. And I love that quote so much. I will say, I say that quote so often.
Producers originally wanted Patrick Stewart to be the voice of Brain from Pinky the Brain, which would have been fine.
Same thing
but,
we do every night, Pinky.
Yeah, but Maurice LaMarche.
Engage.
Maurice LaMarche is so good. Like, I can't imagine anyone but him voicing that character. Oh, man. And Minerva Mink was going, she had the least number of solo shorts in the show, only two. Because her character was scaled back because she was too sexually suggestive for the show's intended audience of children.
Town. That's amazing.
Which, hey, it's all making sense.
As opposed to the nurses?
Yeah.
And inspiring furries for generations.
Exactly. They don't want people yiffing. Whatever that means in the community, I'm sure it's something I shouldn't be saying. And Animaniacs, in 1995, more than one-fifth of the viewers were actually 25 years or older, despite the fact that it was being marketed as a show for kids. So, what would you say is the intended audience range for Magiswords? Like, when you guys are like, we want to get in the brain of someone that is this age.
Well, it kind of works like this. The show is intended for 6 to 11-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
but we're all man children.
Yeah.
we're all huge nerds who are so happy to play in the sandbox. At the same time, we're like, we're never talking down to kids.
Of
we're
course.
Never dumbing down the language. You know, we're making ourselves laugh, but we're also trying not to talk over kids' heads. Mm-hmm. So I would like to think that it's sort of in less like, you know, SpongeBob-ish, Ren and Stimpy-ish range where it's for children, but we hope that they're folks and maybe some college kids enjoy it as well.
Yeah.
I feel like those were the animated shows that really hold up, or those were the ones that really inspired our generation. Are the animated shows that we had that were still, they weren't like talking down to like kids. They were still action and adventurous, and still, you know, like they were talking to like adults, because that's how you got, like, I have nieces and nephews. And that's how you have to talk to them. You talk to them like a human being.
I kind of even liked it when I was a kid, and like I was watching Looney Tunes or The Simpsons, and I didn't necessarily exactly get a joke, but yeah, I knew my folks absolutely. Were laughing pretty hard. That would usually make me want to like look it up and find out.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Why were they laughing?
I agree,
yeah,
completely.
It's the kind of thing you go back years later. You're like, oh, wow.
Yeah,
the one that always gets me is Animaniacs specifically when they're talking about fingerprints.
I knew that was going to come
it's up. It's just immediately when I think of that show. And then Dot's holding Prince, and they look at each other. She's like, yeah, not going to happen.
I don't think so. Yeah.
It's so good.
I always like the one where they were on, like, they were driving around and Jim Morrison kept popping up playing This Is the End. And they kept running over him. And I'm like,
this is the beginning.
So funny. Such a throwaway thing, too.
Yeah.
It's like, why is Jim Morrison there?
That episode, like, it's it's about Apocalypse Now. Like, no kid's going to get what that episode's about. I didn't care.
Your parents really aren't paying attention to what they're renting at the time. Oh, man.
Such a good
Has there been any, like, Easter egg or something you've put in there that you're like, kids definitely aren't going to get this, but we have to include this because it makes us laugh?
Oh, I'm trying to think. Like, there's tons like that. I'm trying to think of a specific one.
Mm-hmm.
There's one freeze frame gag that one of our board artists put in where it's like they're shooting a bunch of cans off a log, and one of them says freeze frame gags for nerds. So if you actually pause the video, you can catch that.
That's cool.
That's funny.
The kind of thing that I love when shows reward that kind of like very detailed viewing, where if you're just like, wait, oh
what
man,
did that say, and then you freeze it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like in last week's episode, Squirrel Domination, there's a point where, you know, our lead character is, Vambra, she's afraid of squirrels. And you know, she, you know, sees them, these golden squirrels hide behind this tree and says, squirrels, why did it have to be squirrels? So I'd like to think that someday the kids watching the show will watch Indiana Jones and wonder why they're making Mighty Magiswords references.
Yeah, right?
Wow. This time traveler must have gone back.
Indiana Jones ripped off Magiswords. This is BS. I'm going to write a letter to Harrison Ford, who's now 120 years old.
I'll tell you what, though. There's a lot of stuff that, like, I can't remember at this moment, but there's things that, like, from shows that I remember watching, and I would see things. And then as you get older or whatever, you watch older movies or whatever, and you're like, holy cow, wait a minute. That's where they got that from. And that's always like a fun, you know.
Yeah.
I can't remember specifics, but.
In one of the 5-minute shorts, Luke Ski, one of our board artists, like put in the Steve Martin reference, enough comedy jokes. And I'm like, all right, Luke, I'm letting you have this
one.
Right.
This one's for you.
Here's an amateur phylactic. Here's a prophylactic. here's a joke for everybody in the back, in the back row. This is a dime. I got a new stereo the other day. It's a Google Phonic. I love Steve Martin. I could talk. My buddy and I, we were at a bar the other night at like a birthday party, and we kind of just secluded and just started talking about like comedy isn't pretty and all that. It's such, so funny. I love Steve Martin. Anyways.
Who would be your dream person to have do a guest voice on Magiswords?
Weird Al, and he was the first guest voice we had.
Really? Amazing. All right. Accomplished. Let's pack it in.
I happened to be just in this perfect situation where our head writer at the time was Doug Lawrence, a.k.a. Mr. Lawrence, who is also the voice of Plankton on SpongeBob.
Nice.
And this is before he returned to SpongeBob due to this kind of like perfect situation that he thought would never happen. But he and Weird Al were trying to write a movie in the 90s that never came to fruition.
UHF 2?
I don't know if I think it might have been something else that, like, you know, involved doing the short TV parodies like that, which, you know, ends up in a lot of Weird Al's projects. They did that in the Weird Al show, too. And then also during that time, Al had to do, like, those compilation albums, the TV album and the food album, and he got Doug to do the cover of the food album because he didn't want to do these compilations, and then this way he was able to associate it with a cool drawing that his friend did instead of like the thing that the record label made him do. But because they knew each other that way, we were able to, you know, very easily get Weird Al to do a guest voice for us.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. That's where networking pays off. It's like, I happen to be friends with this person that you desperately want. Perfect.
But yeah, They're kind of like just gradually happening. A lot of these have to do with, you know, I'll run across a character and realize that, oh, this person I watched on TV in the 90s would be perfect for this.
Just like with when they brought the Flash back. You know who would be great to play the Flash's dad? The old Flash.
Yeah, for example, we've had on Pauly Schreier, who played Bulk in Power Rangers.
Oh,
get
man.
Out of town. That's amazing.
And also we've had on Ryder Strong, who was Sean in Boy Meets World, I didn't have him on because even though I was a big Boy Meets World fan, I had him on because I heard him in Thrilling Adventure Hour. Because I wasn't really like thinking of his voice before that, and here I am, you know, in Thrilling Adventure Hour, I'm listening to his voice isolated, and I'm like, oh, that would be perfect for this character.
Yeah,
I'm looking. You got Dave Coulier.
Yes, who was fantastic to work with, like. I mainly needed to, like, I would be totally ruining the joke if I told you who I had him play.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see it, you'll get it. He was so, like, so good. He was, like, so easy to work with and so adaptable with, you know, because we had him to play a character and then had him play a couple of other ancillary characters as well. He was just so easy and fun to work with that I might just deliberately try to come up with some other
stuff
to have him do just to have him back in again.
Nice.
That's great.
And I see that you also had Aaron Hansen on, and I know that
he's a regular with us.
The theme song.
Yes.
Are you guys just like big fans of the Game Grumps?
That was an interesting situation because I, you know, became a huge Game Grumps fan after, you know, John Barry, who is now, you know, one of our storyboard artists. He was also one of our animators, but this is back when we were working at like a tiny studio and Game Grumps was relatively new. Like it had been, I think it had been out for a few months at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had been at least somewhat aware of Aaron's animation before that, and I had seen, you know, JonTron's videos. And he turned me on to them, and I'm like, all right, what is this? Oh, God, I can't live without this.
Yeah.
And it just kind of became my, you know, I can't think right now. I need to watch something on the couch and not think too hard. You know, I would turn Game Grumps on, and that's, you know, my frequent lunchtime viewing with my wife as well.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, like I do with a lot of, you know, celebrities of a certain level I like, I'll just like add them on Facebook and see if they say yes. And if they don't say yes, I won't be upset.
Exactly. Like,
and you know, I accepted my friend request. A couple of years go by and, excuse me, Mighty Magic Swords gets announced. And he sends me this message telling me, like, congratulating, telling me what a fan he was of my stuff. Oh,
that's
all of
awesome.
These years.
That's awesome.
Because I've been putting stuff online for a long time. Yeah. I'm like, you,
wait,
me? What? And so, like, it was just kind of this delightful mutual admiration society. And, you know, we, you know, got together just at a diner, like, just talk about stuff for a while. And then, you know, down the line, I had actually texted him to ask him if he wanted to do, like, some freelance designs. And he said he wouldn't be able to do that, but if I ever wanted him for voices. And, you know, a lot of people say, hey, if you ever need me for voices. And if someone isn't in SAG, I, you know, can't. You know, unless there's some special circumstance, I can't use them.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I would love to have Aaron do voices, but I don't think I can. So I'm like, well, unless you're on SAG. And he says, oh, I am. I'm like, what?
Sold.
Yeah. And so we pretty quickly, you know, I already knew exactly what character I wanted him to play. And he's, you know, continued to play Gatto in the show,
mm-hmm.
as well as some other, you know, ancillary characters who have come up and, you know, some characters who were smaller parts that became bigger parts.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's the thing I love about social media. For everyone who complains about how alienating it is and like how it's making us just like stare at our phones all the time, it can bring people together in cool ways in real life. Like, you just by reaching out, worst case scenario, you don't get a response.
Right.
Best case scenario, you meet someone cool or you wind up working together.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Cool. And when can people find Mighty Magic Swords? When does it air on Cartoon Network?
Thursday nights at 6:30.
Thursday nights at 6:30. So viewers out there, set your DVR or
Thursday.
Do they show the episodes on the website as well?
Currently,
or the
there are the 5-minute episodes which are exclusively for the web.
Okay,
that you can see on the website and as well as on YouTube. The first two episodes I believe are currently on the website.
Cool.
I don't know if they can intend to continue doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But
you can catch up. And watch the 5-minute episodes on CartoonNetwork.com.
That's right. And also on Cartoon Network's YouTube account.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Thursday nights at 6:30.
Right.
P.M. If you wake up at A.M., you're going to be disappointed.
You're going to be tired.
You're going to have to go back to sleep for half an hour.
P.M.
Unless it's Saturday morning, then you might luck out.
Exactly. Yeah. Then, hey, more weekend for you.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Congratulations on everything and good luck even more.
Thanks.
Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at tvskyle.tumblr.com, as well as if you want to hear more of my music, you can hear me at tvskyle.bandcamp.com.
Fantastic.
Got it.
Awesome. And you guys can also find us online. The podcast is on Twitter at TWL Podcast. We are on Facebook. Today We Learned Razzle and Dan. You can also send us an email, todaywelearnedpodcast@gmail.com. And if you guys have left us a review or said anything kind on iTunes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you haven't yet, then what's your problem?
Yeah, guys.
Just kidding. I don't want to antagonize you. If you take the time to leave us a review, we really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And you can also find us individually. Razzle, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at my name is Razzle, the number 2. My name is Razzle 2. You can follow me on Instagram at my name is Razzle. And then Snapchat, I guess my name is Razzle, but I kind of just do the Instagram stories now.
Nice. Yeah, there's no real need for Snapchat anymore.
Other than the filters.
Unless you're a
other
teenager.
Other than the filters. I mean, Instagram doesn't have like the dog.
How am I supposed to look like a dog?
I want to look like a dog. You have to get
life-changing surgery.
I want the bottom of the screen to say what part of town I'm in.
Yeah, and the weather. And hey, the fact that I'm moving 0 miles per hour.
Do you guys think we can get hashtag no need for Snapchat to trend?
It takes up too many characters.
Hashtag no need for Snapchat. I don't know. I mean, there isn't, but there's no filters on Instagram. Hey, Instagram, get me some filters.
Yeah, no need for IG stories.
Dan, where can everybody find you?
You can find me online at on Instagram and Twitter at osteoferocious, and you can find me on Nerdist pretty much every day. Make sure to tune in Thursday afternoons, 4 p.m. Pacific time, twitch.tv/Nerdist, or if you're a member of Project Alpha, projectalpha.com is in early access right now. You can watch there 4 p.m. Pacific time for Secret Headquarters, my live weekly pop culture panel show. Anyway, that's it for me. Anything else you'd like to plug, Razzle? Or?
No.
All right.
That's it.
Cool.
Good times.
All right, guys. Movies. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As always.
And as always, if it's not a sword, you can't cut with it. I don't know, man. I tried.
Hey, man, that works. It's true.
If you say it like this, it yeah. must be a rule.
Exactly. Legally, it's true.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.